Thank you, Dan, for the songs and Willis for the prayer, for the reading we had. Sometimes it seems anticlimactic to have to get up and speak when you've had such good worship to this point in time. I'd like for you to turn to the 23rd Psalm, a song that we just sang, leads in with "The Lord is my shepherd." I'd like to spend a little time with you on that tonight. Appreciate the opportunity to be here, as always said, and I know for a fact that it's meant when it's said that you appreciate the opportunity to speak. A certain amount of confidence and congregation's willing to allow you to speak what's on your mind, and I appreciate that opportunity now. And something over 15 years of preaching at least twice on Sunday, sometimes three and even four on occasion for afternoon services, never preached a sermon on the 23rd Psalm, in spite of the fact that you're always looking for lessons, especially if you happen to be working at a full-time job at the same time, you're looking for lessons. Never occurred to me to preach a lesson on the 23rd Psalm, because what else could you say? It's all there. It's a short six verses. It just seems to be pretty plain, pretty clear. And yet I'd like to see if we can't find a message in there somewhere for us. The 22nd Psalm is a psalm of the Good Shepherd who gives his life for us. And the 24th Psalm is about the Great Shepherd that you read about in the 13th chapter of Hebrews, in the closing verses, and the beginning of the 20th verse, that God raised up from the dead. But the 23rd Psalm is about the Chief Shepherd. Something interesting about this struck me in looking at it, really preaching, looking at a lesson on the 22nd Psalm. It occurred to me that something that's unexpected happens in the 23rd Psalm, in the very beginning. David says that the Lord is my shepherd, which says that David is saying, I'm a sheep. He's saying, I'm a sheep. Maybe that doesn't mean very much to you, but I think this sort of came home to me. The Dallas Morning News has a little section in it that where they highlight various high performers in the community, and it tells all about their lives and their work, and it has a little section in it that's sort of a humorous thing, but it asks a lot of questions about these people and gives them some suppose and what ifs. And one of the questions it asks always is, if you could be any animal you wanted to be, what would you be? Well, you might imagine that all these type A, type B people who have risen to the top are a lot of lions and a lot of tigers and a lot of hawks and maybe a few sharks. You know, maybe Ron or Miles would be a giraffe, but you don't see any sheep in there. You just never see anybody, I want to be a lamb. I want to be a sheep. There's just something missing in there. You know, imagine the football teams that are out here playing today, if you please, would be the Dallas Lambs playing the Buffalo Sheep. The cheerleader's going, bah, bah, you know, I mean, whatever. The sheep's just not anything worthwhile. In fact, I was reading about it. A man wrote a book called The Shepherd Looks at Psalms 23. And he said a sheep is the absolute most useless animal as far as itself is concerned. We get meat from it. We get wool from it. But in and of itself, it's just there to die. That's all it can do is die. A lot of animals, if there's a lot of them, they can protect themselves. A herd of wildebeest or whatever, even though themselves might not be strong. A herd of them can a herd of sheep's just a lot of death. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of people, I mean, a lot of animals there to die. They just don't have much. And David said, I'm a sheep. Now here's the greatest king of the greatest nation at that time is saying, I'm a sheep. You understand what that represents in terms of humility, to say that I'm a sheep. And that's what he's saying. The sheep is the one animal that cannot protect itself. A sheep, when it is attacked by an animal, a cougar, a mountain lion, attacks the sheep, it is so frightened that it doesn't even attempt to get away, and it makes no noise whatsoever. And this writer says that people that have seen this have seen a mountain lion or a cougar, same thing. The idea of an animal that attacks them, eat them alive. They don't even try to get away. They're so terrified. They're so frightened they can't even leave the scene. Reminds you of dumb before his shearers open not his mouth. Passage talking about Jesus with that comparison. Sheep has nothing to protect him. He can't use his feet. He can't even get up if he rolls over. When he's with full wool and he falls, The sheep herder has to count the sheep coming and going frequently, because if they fall in a ditch, they can't get out because they can't even get back on their feet. They can't run. They can't bite. All the animals in the animal kingdom and the insects, all of them have some way of protecting them. The ants can live on a hill, and a mosquito can bite you, and even a flea can bite you, but a bird can fly away. Lions and tigers, the ferociousness of them. Elephant, just for their size. But a sheep can't do anything. Unique thing about a sheep is that in its total inability to protect itself, God has assigned man to look after it. And that's the analogy as you go through here that I want you to think of, that God has assigned himself to take care of man, being the sheep in this case. Think in those terms as we go through this lesson. The lesson is an interesting lesson in that, or the psalm is an interesting lesson in that it talks about the goodness of God. We think of God as the creator of the universe. He can call things into being that don't even exist. He has this great power. He holds the universe and all the galaxies in place, and he's put them all there. But this psalm really starts out with breakfast. It just starts out taking care of you. Does God really care, this great God, care about me in my day-to-day activities? Does he care about breakfast, if you please? But look at the psalm. It starts out with breakfast, and it ends up with forever. This is how great God is. Somebody's compared God to gravity in this sense, in that we recognize the power of gravity as gravity holds the universe together. I mean, why is it that we are where we are as far as the planets are concerned, and as far as the sun and the moon and all the galaxies? Because of gravity, it has that great power. And yet you have seen in the hospital, perhaps in the nursery section, a newborn babe of some kind that just maybe hours old. And a nurse take a small medicine drop, tiny medicine drop, and drop a tiny drop in that baby's eyes. You know how it got there? It got there with gravity. Gravity pulled it down and it came into the child's eye. God's like that. God can create all of these things and has this great power. But he can feed us breakfast too. You know, the prayer that Jesus gave as a model prayer: give us this day our daily bread. This day-to-day ability. And that's what this is talking about. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the quiet waters. He restores my soul. Sheep don't do anything on their own. They can't do anything on their own. They won't go out and eat grass, and when that's gone, go to another place. Cows will go out and they'll eat. When that's gone, they'll keep on and they'll go another place, and they'll even try to break the fence down and get to the grass on the other side. A sheep will just stand there and eat until the grass is all gone, or the weeds are all gone, or the poisonous plant is all gone. They have no ability to recognize what's poison and what's not. And they will eat what's there, and then they'll scratch it with their feet and eat the roots. And then they'll just stay there and starve if something doesn't happen, if somebody doesn't move them to another place. The shepherd takes care of them, makes sure that they are protected. This writer said that sheep won't lay down and rest for four reasons. If they're afraid or frightened of anything, and a lot of things frighten them. But they develop a trust of this shepherd so that they're not frightened. But the shepherd has to be there and create this trust, and we'll see that in just a minute. I know congregations that are frightened. They don't have the trust in God that things are going to go, and they're always sure that things are going to go bad or something bad will happen, or in their own lives, Christians that don't have that kind of trust, and they're just but suppose if. And I read a fable just yesterday that talked about the lady who had just nothing. Her husband was dead. She had a small child. She had a job, a menial task. She made just enough to get by and just enough to have a shelter. And one of the good women in the church says, "But aren't you frightened? Just suppose something happened to your child and you had to have a big medical bill. Just suppose that something happened to you and you couldn't work. Just suppose you lost your job." And the lady said, wait a minute. You don't understand. It's all that supposing that's going to get you in trouble. I'm thankful that God takes care of me and my child. And I do have a job, and I do have those things. People are afraid because they don't trust God. Sheep won't lie down and rest if they're hungry or thirsty. And I've been in congregations where the congregation was hungry for lack of teaching. Hungering and thirsting after righteousness, but not being there and not having any way to get it filled. Or maybe their own lives were such that they weren't trying to get it. It's a sad thing to have access to the Word of God and not eat it, not study it, and we can't rest as a result of it. Sheep won't lie down if they are angry. Somehow mad or somehow are gotten into a turmoil of some kind. If you ever see a herd of sheep, and I remember going through Turkey and seeing the herds on the sides of the hills, shepherds everywhere dotting the sideline. And every once in a while you'd see some turmoil, and talking about that, you'll see a big E-W-E, not Y-O-U, sheep here, female sheep, and they get sort of bossy in the flock, and they get stiff-legged, and they turn their head sort of funny, and they walk around, and they butt the other sheep. And I've seen Christians like that. Just never quite as happy as they are when they're stirring up some trouble somewhere and going around and sort of butting people and trying to create a stir of some kind. And the flock can't rest. None of the flock will rest when that's happening. And then sheep won't lie down and rest if they're weak or if they are sick of some kind. And I think congregations get that way. I think Christians get that way. They get sick in spirit. They get weak in spirit. But who takes care of all of this for the sheep? The shepherd does. And we have our shepherd. He makes me to lie down. He goes out ahead of me and he checks the grass and he finds new grass. And he's always looking for another place to graze. And he checks to make sure that this is not poison. May pull the weeds that would cause a problem, or make sure that the sheep stay away from it. makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. An interesting thought process, because that's what the shepherd has to do, is to look after these sheep. Remember, they have no protection. They have nothing. They can take care of themselves. No way of taking care of themselves. And the shepherd has assigned that task, looking after them. And God has taken that. Our good shepherd, Jesus Christ, looks after us, worries about us, guides us in paths of righteousness. But we have to trust him. It's real interesting because a shepherd has to develop the trust of the sheep to where they will trust and do what he says do and where he wants them to go. And they will follow. And that's not the easiest thing in the world. You don't send a hireling out to take care of a flock, because hirelings don't have that concern for the sheep. The shepherd knows the sheep like Jesus knows his own. The shepherd knows the sheep, knows their peculiarities. Some wander away. You know what they do when you have a sheep that constantly wanders away? Sounds pretty bad. The shepherd breaks their front legs, then splints it, and then carries them around until they're well. And from that time on, the sheep trust. You wouldn't think so, but they don't have very good memory either. They're not only defenseless, they're stupid. But seriously, they develop this trust. And from that time on, they stay close to the master. They stay close to. Now you know what? Jesus has to break our legs every once in a while. Has to bring us down to our knees, if you please. And a lot of times we don't get brought down often enough, perhaps. We just keep on and keep on and keep on and keep on and forget where we've been. We go back. It said that a sheep is the most habitual animal in the animal kingdom. It does the same thing. Left alone, it will walk in the same path. It will create a rut, and it will go and go and go, and it will just continue to do that. It will eat in the same place. If you left it alone, it would go and eat in the same place it ate yesterday and the day before and the day before. There used to be an expression, they make a verb out west, they make a verb out of the word sheep. They talk about sheeping the land. Meaning that they have, there was always a battle. You know, you never see a good Western that you don't have the sheep herders against the ranchers over here, because the sheep would go in and simply strip the land bare, or sheep it, if you please. Because they have this habit of going back. And we're creatures of habit. And we have that bad memory too. We keep going back into the same sins that we've been in before. We see other people, and we don't learn from it. We see people doing things that they really shouldn't do. We do things we really shouldn't do. We go places we really shouldn't do. We try things we really shouldn't try. Because we've got bad memories, and we're creatures of habit. We just keep going back to the same thing. That didn't get us anywhere to start with. We need to trust in God. But listen to what he's saying now. He's saying here that he guides us in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Now that's almost a selfish expression. But what he's really saying there is that God wants us to be righteous because we're wearing his name. And we need to stay in the paths of righteousness so that God doesn't get a bad name as a result of our activities. And we've seen that so many times happen. We see that people give God a bad name. In talking about personal work, one of the things that I think is important is that I have to ask myself every once in a while, when I go to talk to somebody at work or in the neighborhood or friends or at the club or at school or wherever it is, are they going to be surprised when I mention something about the Bible? I didn't know you were interested in that. Now, whose fault is that? It's not their fault. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Maybe we don't go and do personal work sometimes because we've got to establish a whole new relationship. Because we've been fussing and fighting with our neighbor, now we're going to try to save their soul. Or we've been living a life and doing things at work that we shouldn't be doing, and now we've got to bring God into this, and we've got to justify ourselves or figure a way to get out of that and look all right. Verse 4, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. A couple of interesting things about this. What happens is in high country or in mountainous areas, and you go into Switzerland, you'll see this, as they begin to take the flocks as in the spring, as the thaw starts to come, they work their way up the hills, up the mountains. And the sheep get the fresh, tender grass as they go up, and they stay there and they graze summertime. And then in the fall, as the weather starts to close in, they begin to work their way back down. Was up in a place called Brooks Lodge off the peninsula area of Alaska and trout fishing. And one of the places that they had there was a place you could go and watch the bears. As the spawning season was coming, the bears had a ledge that they gathered from all over the place to come and just stand there and wait for the fish as they came up. And as they were coming up and jumping the bears, you could watch them, and they would just swipe, make a big swipe, and catch the salmon or the trout coming up. Well, you know, the animals do exactly that same thing. The mountain lions do exactly that same thing, and the other beasts that prey on the sheep. They lie in wait for these sheep to come down in the fall. Except that they have this protection that they have a gray fur, and they can lie here on a rock, and you can't even see them. They don't make any noise. They're just there. And they're just a part of the scenery. And that's the time of all the times of the year that the shepherd has to be the most alert, to watch this and make sure that one of these predators doesn't get the sheep. Because they can get it and get it just like that. They move quietly, the sheep are paralyzed when they see it, don't move, and they are taken and they're eaten. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil, for thou art with me. We don't have to fear that because God is there helping us and looking after us. Satan will lie in wait for us, but God warns us about that. We worry. We have problems. We're concerned. We've lost our trust in God. God, take care of us. But there's an interesting shift here in this. In verse 3 and down to verse 3, it says, the Lord's my shepherd, I'll not want. He makes me lie down. He leads me. He restores my soul. He guides me for his name's sake. But look what happened when fear and evil and danger comes along. It quits being he and becomes thou. The tense changes here and it becomes I. We'll fear no evil, for thou art with me. It's a direct conversation with God, whereas we were sort of describing God here in the generic terms, but now it's direct with that. and I start talking about thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Your rod and your staff will take care of me. You know, it's interesting. You know what a rod is? You young people think that's a gun, a rod, right? If you read any of these things. You know where it got its name? From this same place right here. The shepherd carries this in his sash that he has around his tunic in those days. What it is, it'll be a root. You've heard of an Irish shillelagh, probably. What it is, it's a briar root. And they take the thickest limb that's sticking up, cut all the rest of them off, and dig the root up. Cut all the roots off and have a knot about so big. And then they go and they put that in the fire, and they just like a piece of metal, as they season this, and it becomes really hard. Now it has a handle, and it fits in the belt. And the shepherds are known for their accuracy. They can throw that and hit anything they want to. And surprisingly enough, for the most part, the sheep love to hear that thing whistle over their heads because they know the shepherd's taking care of them, and they've learned that that's their protection. In reading about that, it occurred to me that maybe David had a lot of practice with his sling as a shepherd. That, you know, I'm not suggesting that God wasn't with the stone and didn't put it right where it needed to be. But David had killed lions and had killed animals using the rod. But you know, there's something else that they use the rod for. I said, nearly always they like to hear the sound. Not always, because when they start doing things they're not supposed to, or they don't move, especially the young ones as they're coming along, he uses that rod and can hit them with it. Not hard, but hard enough that they get their attention. He gets their attention, and they make their move, and they go on. They stay and they want to eat. They're eating here in this place, and they're all the way down to the roots, and they want to stay, and it's time to go, and they haven't learned to obey yet, and it doesn't. God has to do that to us again sometimes, you know. When I got through studying this, my legs hurt and my head hurt from being having my legs broken and my head beat on with a rod. But God does that to us, needs to do that to us. And we ought to be glad that he does that. We ought to be glad that he cares. The staff, you know what the staff is? You know, a little Bo Peep? You know, with a little curly with a little ribbon on the top of it. These probably didn't have ribbons on. But that's the staff. It served a lot of purposes, but I think it's the tender part of this whole thing. It's the part that really shows the loving kindness of it. Here's this rod that's used to protect them from animals, or used to get them to get in line, if you please. But their staff is used if they fall down into a crevice and they can't get it. It's made so that they can reach down in there and very gently. It's not tight enough to choke them or hurt them, but they can pull them out of it. If a ewe has a lamb and it can't get up to the mother, they take this staff and they gently pull it up to where it's in contact with its mother and it can nurse. At that age, if he picks it up with his hand, the smell of the human hand and all, sometimes the mother will reject it. But that staff is always with the sheep. In fact, you'll see the shepherd walking along. And I like to think of it as holding hands with the shepherd or with the sheep. They simply go along and they lay this staff on top of the sheep's back and they just walk along with it. And long as the sheep feels that staff, he knows that he's with the master and the master's taking care of him. Isn't that a great analogy of where our relationship with God is? We just feel that staff on us all the time. Feel his hand, know it's out there. Then the scene really changes. We're not talking from verse 5 on about this good shepherd. We're talking about the shepherd king, if you please. We're talking about this powerful king. Thou dost prepare a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou hast anointed my head with oil, my cup overflows. God is, I'm trying to find a word, and I wrote two or three, and I don't like any of them. I put terrible, and that doesn't sound very good. I put vicious, that doesn't sound very good. Mean, that doesn't sound very good. But however you want to put it, when God conquers somebody, they are absolutely conquered. They, when they have been against God, and they've gone against God's people. You read the cases time after time after time where God punished these people. And he what? Remember the king cut off the thumbs and the toe, big toes? And they got scraps from under the table. Thou dost prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemy. Taunting the enemies. Got a football game. Some of you probably didn't know that. Going on right now. And you know what? These players love to do a little dance when they score a touchdown to get in the end zone, right? But there's a limit to how long they can do that. And the referee's watching this, and he will call a penalty on them if they do. You know why? Because that's considered taunting the enemy. In college, you can't even spike the ball when you make a touchdown. You can't, you know, you can lay it down, but you can't make any show whatsoever of taunting the enemy. God taunts his enemies. He lets them know very well that he's God and that he is over them. Heard a story about Bear Bryant. When he was coaching at Kentucky many, many years ago, and he went to the Rose Bowl play, Santa Clara, I think, and lost, and had to go to the banquet that night while they sat around and celebrated and gave trophies to the winning team. Can you imagine? They tried to give Bear Bryant a runner-up trophy. Imagine giving him a runner-up trophy. And he said in his later years, he did what was the most embarrassing thing he had ever done, looking back on it. He was so unhappy at not winning that when they called on him, he stood up and said, "I ain't much for show. I'm a winner myself," and sat down and wouldn't take the trophy. Let me tell you, God's not much for show. And I'm not making that comparison, I hope you understand. God's a winner. He wants us to be a winner. Surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life. That word loving kindness is not a very good translation, but we don't have very good word. It really goes back to the Hasidic vows that the Jews made, where they are vowed to death to take care of that. And God has said, you understand that we went from description of God in the first four verses to the present in verse 5. And verse 6 is the future. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. We started with breakfast. We started with getting something to drink. We started with getting something to eat. And we ended up with forever. That's how great God really is. Having said all of that, I realized, even in studying this, that we may get, or some people may get some false confidence out of this. Let me tell you something. Nothing I've said applies to you if you're not a Christian. If you reject God, you're figuratively got your thumbs and toes, big toes cut off, and you're groveling under the table while he prepares a table for those people who love him. All this comfort, all this trust is available, but it won't do any good if you don't obey. And God expects us to do that. Maybe you're here tonight, some way subject to the invitation of Christ. You know what you need to do. If we can help you in a public way, we'd certainly be glad to do that. Will you stand, please?